We are Science Fiction Remnant, a podcast for sci-fi lovers spanning across books, movies, TV shows, and games. This is Season 1, Episode 47, Movie Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, for May 22nd, 2021. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Science Fiction Remnant. Thank you so much for coming back.
This means a lot to us. We hope that you find this episode as exciting to listen to as it was for us to create for you.
If you like this show and know someone who might like this podcast, please share it. It would help us greatly in growing this channel.
You can also follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant and share any comments you have about this podcast with your friends and family.
But before we continue with the show, here are our sponsors and collaborators.
This podcast is a proud member of the Let's Chat Club. Find out how you can become a member by going to the website letschatpodcast.net.
Hello, potential listeners. My name is The Vern, and I'm the host of the Cinema Recall Podcast. On most shows, myself, along with some great guests, we will talk about a movie and then some of the most iconic moments that happened in said movie. On top of that, you'll get bonus shows where I will give you short reviews about new and classic movies, or I'll just rant and rave about something going on in the entertainment industry. So come check us out. We're available on Anchor, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, most other places. Don't forget to follow us on social media. On Twitter, we are at @cinema_recall. And then on Facebook, Instagram, we are Cinema Recall Podcast. Don't forget to email us your ad spots to play on future episodes. That email is cinemarecall@gmail.com. Hope to see you around, and thank you very much for listening.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Science Fiction Remnant. This is your host, Robert.
And Giancarlo, Science Fiction Remnant from coast to coast in Florida.
Yeah. thank you so much for joining us today. This is going to be our third live. So, reach out to us and let us know if you'd like us to continue doing the live. But the whole idea is for you guys to chime in. You know, you go in the chat and we can have you come in into our conversation, and you can be basically part of the show. For this episode, we're doing The Wrath of Khan, but we couldn't do it justice without bringing one of my favorite podcasts when it comes to sci-fi. And we have one of the hosts of Sci-Fi Wise Guys. Hello. How you doing?
How you doing?
Awesome.
How's it going?
I don't know if you guys have listened to this podcast, but if you haven't, you should definitely give it a try. I actually listen to it myself, and I listen to every episode as soon as it comes in. So for those of our listeners who have not listened to it yet, give us a little detail of what the podcast is about and where they can find you.
All right. First of all major podcast plus all major podcasting platforms. I'm partial to Pocket Casts. I don't know what you guys use, but I like their interface. But my name is Chris. My co-host Anthony can't join us today, but on the Sci-Fi Wise Guys, what we actually do is watch anything that can be considered straight to stream. We bent the rules a little bit. There are some things that we didn't have the opportunity to watch on VOD, but as long as it's science fiction or science fiction adjacent, we'll review it and try to make some jokes. But,
awesome.
That kind of thing.
Awesome. And that's the reason why I wanted to, have a collaboration episode with them, because I really like what they produced. And I had you pick the movie. And this is, if you guys have not seen it, this is, in my opinion, is the best Star Trek movie. If combining all the other stuff, to me, is the best Star Trek movies with the best villain. And I think Giancarlo has strong opinions in that.
Oh, I really like Cannes. And I'm going to say, with your pick, you were like science fiction Cupid with Robert, because Robert loves Star Trek. Back and forth.
All right.
So, yeah.
I can't wait.
This movie is an incredible movie. Considering that if you follow, the first movie that came in, I did like it. I don't know if Giancarlo, did you see the motion picture, Star Trek motion picture, the first one? It's almost Space Odyssey type. Did you get that vibe?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And I, to be honest with you, I love it. I don't know if it's because I love anything Star Trek. The movie was good. But I think that it didn't do well. And I like to hear your opinions on this. I didn't think it did as well as expected because Star Trek. And a lot of people they wanted to see Star Trek or, I mean, Star Wars or Star Wars related content.
And because of the time it came.
Yes. Yes. And when this came in.
You guys that experienced that firsthand, would you call that the dark ages of Star Trek? When Star Wars was obscuring it and Star Wars has nothing to do with it, really.
is Star Wars, I think Star Wars influenced a lot of stuff. And the old, after Star Wars, I mean, the old era of sci-fi was gone. Like, for example, if you look at Logan's Run, that style of sci-fi, there's so many movies out there that once Star Wars came in, it changed the genre. And a lot of people, like me, I enjoyed the first Star Trek movie because of that reason, because I'm a fan of that. You know, I enjoy that kind of old style sci-fi movie.
But correct me if I'm wrong, because I mean, I'm not as big following as you've been doing it from the beginning. But Star Trek was way before Star Wars was even thought of. Am I right or not?
Was it 1967, right?
We were watching Star Trek from 1954. I don't think that they was talking about Star Wars back then.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, Star Trek...
Go ahead, go ahead.
You want this one covered?
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, Star Trek as an entity, as an idea, birthed by one Gene Roddenberry, the Rod Father, came out, was produced in first 1966 to 1967.
Mm-hmm.
And the first Star Wars movie, if I remember correctly, I'm looking it up real quick, 1979?
Way after.
If you think about
1977.
Star Wars came out in 78, I believe, right? I think so.
May 25th, 1977. That's mm-hmm. what Wikipedia says.
So it influenced everything. And yeah, we had Star Trek prior to Star Wars, but so we had a lot of other properties prior to Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that it changed the medium. It changed what people say. To be honest with you, I always wondered if it is because of the production companies and, you know, the almighty dollar, or they, after they see the success, they wanted to see everything else be that so they can make more money. And I think that might be in part the reason why everything changed. The Wrath of Khan was, if and correct me if I'm wrong, I think is one of those casualty of this, you know, reinvention of sci-fi. Gene was going to do part two. And because part one didn't do as well as the studios wanted the movie to do, they kind of canned him. And they went with a complete different vision. I mean, I think he wanted to do, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he wanted to do something with Klingons, time travel, Kennedy assassination, something like that. And they they scrapped it. They scrapped it because it's going to be, and as a matter of fact, I just learned that ILM actually worked in this movie.
It's true.
So, Giancarlos, you had the company that created the special effects for Star Wars worked on this Star Trek movie. So you have both fandoms.
I always got the feeling that the sci-fi community is like a close-knit community. So there's always influence from one thing to the other. No matter what movie you're watching, you see some things. You and I have spoke about this before, Robert, in many other episodes. But there's something, there's always some traces of other movies, books, comics that we see in Star Trek, Star Wars. What I like a lot about Star Trek that is very attractive, and I think that that's like the golden nudge of it, is how accurate they strive to be when it comes to science, even though it's science fiction.
Yeah, it's
they're very technical. Yeah.
It's a good thing you mentioned that, because Star Wars, you know, is always geared towards the fantasy side of things, and Star Trek,
yeah,
although it's still not, because we have talked about this, especially in our episode on The Expanse, they're still, you know, out there when it comes to fantasy. But but at the time, it's the one that came closer to what, you know, was science and technology.
Yeah, and I mean, if you think about it, the things that, like, the elements that I could attest to say they are fantasy in Star Trek are also enigmas of real science, like teleportation, like travel at warp speeds through galaxies. Those are things that we have merely not dominated by real science yet. But it's something that you and I also have spoken many times, that science is just trying to imitate science fiction, and eventually it becomes reality. It's like I love to say, who would have thought 150 years that you would say there's a giant steel vessel flying on the skies, you know? That would have called you crazy. And now that's just one of the most common ways of transportation here. We're talking about colonizing Mars, having a base in the moon. So, like, I mean, technology is moving faster than what we think of. And like, the guideline that they have for it, it's that fantasy.
Yeah. Well, it also helps for Star Trek mostly that anything that you could consider the fantastical parts of Star Trek just happen to take place in the science fiction world. I mean, I love the Star Wars movies. I love the shows. I love the books and everything about it, but they're all based on fantasy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so while I'm not one of those people that says that Star Wars isn't science fiction. It just is science fiction, and it has its own little spot called space fantasy, because they're based on the Arthurian legends. The Jedi Masters are based on samurai from ancient Japan.
Like, and mysticism about the force and things like that.
Yeah, that's magic.
I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, yeah. that's what I say. Star Trek tries to, I will say, theorize so much about the science fiction that it will get you confused.
Yeah,
but Star Wars doesn't try to sugarcoat it. They are as much sci-fi as they are fantasy.
Yeah, like Robert, you've probably seen more Star Trek than Geo, I assume.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like Q.
More than you, probably.
No, but yeah, Q.
Maybe. Who knows? Or any of the other Q-like entities, which are these beings that can just manipulate matter. That's magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they spin it off in a way that they say, I've ascended to this higher plane of existence. I'm no longer bound by the reality of the material world. That's what allows me to do whatever I want to do with a thought. Whereas in Star Wars, and there's nothing wrong with the way that, you know, George decided to do this, but it's the Force. That's what it is. You know, you can move a planet. It's the Force. You can project yourself across the galaxy and pretend to fight your nephew. Oh, that's the Force. That's okay. That's fine. In Star Trek, they just try to church it up a little bit, I guess.
But I like to give it a little twist, because here's my observation too. If you actually think further, those things are a little bit mixed up with our realities, because when you read a lot about mysticism, yogis and people that reach nirvana and so, these are things that they're supposedly capable of doing too in our reality.
Yeah.
So in some way, it always mixed up so much with the reality of a real world that it's easier for you to transport yourself to that world that they're portraying to us.
And you know, sometimes you wonder, you know, what part of that is due to, you know, science copying art. Like we spoke before in a previous episode, how people that grew up, I mean, we're talking about a property that started, in 1966. So people that grew up watching this and idolizing this and wishing they could live in a society or in a future that had all these conveniences of this technology, all this, you know, magical aspects of that science fiction property. We all grew up, and eventually some of us ended up in scientific jobs, or maybe one end up in... for example, Motorola, and they came back with a flip phone, and you know, because they were influenced by what they wanted to see in the future from something they saw when they were growing up. And
Like the badges on Next Generation are just Bluetooth microphones.
Yeah,
that's all they are. They're just Bluetooth.
So, and I'm going to take it a little farther. Is if you're familiar with the Cuvieri drive, that is a warp drive, and is actually described as a warp drive. And this is something that NASA is currently investigating, because in theory, you could break Einstein's rule, where you can travel faster than the speed of light, yet not traveling faster than the speed of light, warping space-time. So this is someone that grew up in this Star Trek universe and had a theory and made a doctorate on it that now NASA is investigating. And it's something really fascinating to me, because when I started watching, and I always wonder, you know, that young mind, watching how these ships in Star Trek will travel, like they punch a button and you see the stars just flying through and you see the streaks. And I always wonder, they don't have seat belts. And you know why they don't, you know, they don't, something bad happens. And if you think of it, And if you think about it, this person made it a reality, because in theory, if you use a warp drive, if NASA would be able to make the warp drive a reality, this is something that warp space times around you. So you'll be standing still. You don't experience acceleration. You don't experience anything. Yet you're traveling faster than the speed of light. So it's mind blowing to me that things like that could have a chance to become a reality because of people that grew up watching this. And I don't know if it's they wanted to make it a reality, or maybe they got inspired to create something that wasn't there. But it's all over the place. And not only in science, but like you said, Giancarlo, there's influences from, I mean, just to give an example, we talked about Space Odyssey in our episode. There's a lot of movies after that. They have some sort of influence from that movie. You can find something.
Space Odyssey is a milestone of sci-fi.
Yeah. I mean, it is probably the science fiction movie.
The mother of science fiction. and I mean, you can tell Robert, like, I try not to be picky about special effects, but they influence a lot in my interest. Like, I was watching Galactica, but I was doing it more for educational material than really enjoying the special effects. But like when I watched Space Odyssey, I was amazed to believe the time in which that movie was made and the special effects, how everything looks. Yeah. It doesn't look like a 50, 60 years old movie. It looks like a movie that was made a couple of years ago.
And the best part is it still looks good in 2021. Whereas you have movies from the 80s or the 90s or the 2000s that look terrible in retrospect whenever you look at special effects. So
the last Starship Trooper we did recently after
The Last Starfighter?
The Last Starfighter.
That's a good
We did
movie.
The Last Starfighter recently right after a Space Odyssey. And I mean, you can see the difference, and they are not actually The Last Starfighter was made way low after Space Odyssey. So just with that, you can see the detail to attention that they put on special effects and how great it came out. And that's what I think makes that movie, besides being a big milestone in the mother of science fiction, it makes it a timeless movie. It doesn't get old. It doesn't, as special effects and technology advances, the movie doesn't stay behind.
Yeah.
Which is funny because it kind of killed the golden age of science fiction. Ironically, because science fiction movies from the 50s and the 40s and the 60s were all campy, you know, the Day the Earth Stood Still.
Yes.
Yeah.
Silver Mannequin, you know, right? Klaatu. And then you have 2001 A Space Odyssey comes out, and all of a sudden now science fiction can be taken seriously. Like, oh, this is a place for us to tell a story. And the only difference between this and some thriller is that we just happen to be in space. We're just not in New York or San Francisco or Tokyo or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so after that movie came out, you couldn't make those campy science fiction movies anymore. Like you had to take them seriously. So that's what happens, that Star Trek, the show, was campy. I love it. It's campy.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of close-ups. You know, Shatner is going whole hog. Like he's very dramatic in his scenes.
Yes.
You know, Spock he's very, very stiff. Bones is very dramatic. And then 2001 A Space Odyssey comes out. And then they make the motion picture, which you could consider it a failure. It made $90 million.
Yeah.
Like its budget was 44. It made $139 million. So, but they tried way too hard to make that movie. The motion picture was far too similar to A Space Odyssey.
Yeah.
And the movie that we watched, Wrath of Khan, thankfully occurred. You know, it was the happy accident, or not accident, but what's the...
Experiment, you could call it?
I guess reaction. Like, because Star Wars came out, and the studios were like, no. We can't have another 132-minute movie. Like, you can't do that again. You have to make it more action-packed. You have to give it more story, have more drama. And so that's why we have Wrath of Khan.
I think it got Paramount TV, the budget of like a... I venture to say it almost got the budget of a TV, which is $12 million compared to the first movie. So it's just like, whoa. I mean, that's $12 million... budget eventually, because I think they started, was it 11 or 10, and they raised it up. I can't remember exactly what happened, but it eventually became 12, which is, I mean, for a movie, this is is really poor. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
And they made $97 million overall after everything came down. So they made. And, you know, I'm surprised it didn't make a lot more, because this movie is great.
Mm-hmm.
It brought... go ahead.
I was going to say, it's probably had the stink of the first one on it. You know, they're just like, oh, I saw Star Trek in theaters. That movie wasn't very good. They made a second one. Why would I go see a second one?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And then people got to see it, and you got regret coming in. I should have seen that in the theaters.
But that's the down part of when movies go more from the economics than the actual integrity of the story. Mm-hmm. And that gets lost in the way. It's kind of the trade-off effect. And I see it happens a lot where when I read a great story and when they make the movie, it's not as great because they're trying to concentrate more on making it attractive to a wider variety of an audience than keeping the integrity of the story. I mean, don't go further. One of my favorite books series ever from Edgar Rice Burroughs, John Carter from Mars. When they made the movie, Robert tells me that the older movie is better. Still have to watch it. But I read through the 7th, 8th book. And when I watched the first movie, you can ask Robert, even though I love the movie, I was not pleased of how they mixed up 3 books in one in a very scrambled up order. And I mean, everything that they aimed to was to attract audience. So they compromised the integrity of the story on the way. And I'm sure that has happened with many other series and show, including Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah. And you know that Ricardo Montalban, let me rewind a little bit. This is, in my opinion, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but this is the first movie that I remember seeing that is a part two to an episode on a TV show.
Yeah, I think so.
This I'm sorry?
I will venture to say it's the first time for me.
Is it's an episode, I think, was it season 1, episode 22? The first season. A Space Seed. This is when Kirk...
Yes, that's true about that.
I'm sorry?
That you're correct. I was reading about that because that's where Khan comes in the show. So you're actually correct. It's Space Seed, the name of the episode where it came from, the sequel of the movie.
So what I was going to say, which, by the way, this is kind of, should I say, ballsy from the studios or whoever. They wrote the script not reaching out and hoping that, I mean, not really thinking that Ricardo Montalban might be interested or even willing to do the film. Locally for us, let me see that, because I think he's one of the best villains. He agreed, but he had an issue. I don't know if you knew this. I was reading about where, you know, it's been a long time since he reprised the role. He had a hard time trying to get into the essence of Khan. So he had to, I think he asked the studios for a tape of that episode, and he watched it. And after multiple times of rewatching that episode, he was able to grasp that concept of what it is, Khan. Because remember, at the time, he was doing Fantasy Island. And he's a complete different character. You know? So,
I think that doesn't use of a good actor.
Yeah. But, you know, I was really surprised that he was, you know, because, you know, it's Fantasy Island. You would think for an actor that would take a lot of your time. You know, it's a TV show. You have to record multiple times. So I'm really glad that they were able to make it happen where, you know, they weren't really hurting his TV show. Let's call that the day job. And we're able to film around it. But just the fact that he's that dedicated to, you know, bring that essence. Yep. I'm really glad because it would have been a disaster because you're so used to that, you know, that villain in that episode, which was one of the best episodes too in Star Trek, if you think about it.
It's a nemesis for Star Trek. Khan, it's the nemesis. It's the worst thing they ever face, if you think about it.
Well, yeah. I think he's I mean, it happens all the time on all the shows, but you know how the ship is almost taken over? You know what I mean? Like, it's a I think he was considered the most dangerous villain that Kirk and the original Enterprise faced, because I think he was the only one that almost got it.
Yes.
And the only reason why he didn't succeed is because that woman that he had brainwashed turned on him at the last second. So,
yeah.
You know, and he still marries her. I don't know what he's doing. Come on.
And you know, I just find out she was supposed to come up in this movie. They reached out to her. They had a part on her in the script. And I think she had some health issues and she was in a wheelchair and she couldn't do it. So they had to write her off the script. And that's why you notice when they asked Khan, you know, and he said, oh, my wife died, you know, and it was, they come out and said that it was referencing her from that show. I was really surprised about that, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a shame because, you know, it would have been kind of cool to see. Although, I don't know, because I don't know if you heard this, but the cast, you know, the cast that they picked for Khan's crew, they were Chippendales.
Whoa. With all the clothing they had, you have to expect that.
I was really surprised when I read that. They're Chippendales. Like, okay, I guess, you know.
Do you want a funny little piece of trivia about his crew?
Go ahead.
Joachim, because as much as I liked Ricardo Montalban's performance, he says some funny words. Like when he dies, he says, I will avenge you.
Oh.
He doesn't say, I will avenge you. I will avenge you. Like, anyways, that guy who he's talking to, Joachim, he really upset the producers and they didn't credit him for that movie.
Wow.
He and David, Kirk's son, show up in an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation later on. I think it's in the first season. It might be the second season, but it was their way of making up for that. Cause he's never going to get residuals. You know what I mean? Like that's his job. That could affect his career. And they just didn't credit him. So,
wow. That was bad.
He never was a,
what?
He never was a vinged.
He never was a vinged.
Now, let me ask you before we move forward from the actor, Ricardo Montalban, what is your favorite Khan? Ricardo Montalban?
Oh,
Montalban. Benedict Cumberbatch.
I knew you were going to go there.
It's possible. One.
Of course I have to.
I mean, it's... and this isn't a situation where the original isn't always the best, because I think Daniel Craig's the best Bond, in my opinion. But Montalban is the best Khan. I mean, he just... Everything about him, like, the way he moves, like, in the opening... Not in the opening scene, but when they're on Alpha Ceti 5... And he's walking around and he's like undressing himself casually. Like he stands there and he removes his veil and then he pulls off his mask and he just has a presence. And he's just this withered old, you know, tyrant. And as much as I liked Benedict Cumberbatch, I just don't think he did the same.
I think Kylo Ren watched that movie.
What do you think?
I think Kylo Ren watched that movie.
Kylo Ren. You see, I like Benedict Cumberbatch far more. Like, I don't know if he's his psychopathic.
Well, here's the thing.
High-thinking character that really captivated me when I saw the new movie with Khan impersonated by him.
Here's my thought, okay? Benedict is a great actor. You know, he has presence. He could have done, he did an okay Khan only because we really love how Ricardo plays the role. He is it. He is, you know, there's nobody better than him. My thought is, it was almost as wasted talent because I know they're in my opinion, they were trying to replicate the formula for the Wrath of Khan in that movie. because everything was like repeated but backwards. Like, you know, Spock died, but in this one is Kirk that died. And, you know, they changed a bunch of things and they made everything the same yet different. But to me, I always thought, and I don't know if you agree with this, Giancarlo, it was almost like a wasted talent, because they could have, he could have done a great, great, awesome bad guy, just not Khan. Come up with someone new. And he can, he could do it, you know? But trying to copy some, the formula of something that worked, like for, to give an example, Khan had a certain sexiness to him, right? Yeah, he's always had that chest out, and you know that, and he worked out. You know, I think he came out on one of those late night shows, and he said, like, was it really like, especially in the Wrath of Khan, you know, did you wear some prosthetics? It's like, no, it was me just doing a lot of push-ups. You didn't see that from Benedict. So, you know.
Yeah, but Benedict has a very nice anatomy, too.
I know.
And, but here's the thing. He has a sex appeal to himself, too.
Exactly. But the thing is, it was a different kind. It's kind of like you have a recipe, you know, for the perfect chocolate chip cookie, right? And then someone goes, grabs that and changes things around.
It makes an oatmeal
cookie. They might be good. There you go. It might be good. It might, but it's not the same flavor. So it's kind of like, I think that's what, in my opinion, I might be completely wrong here, but the fans of Star Trek, I think on a subconscious level, they catch that. And you're like, okay, I'm used to this. This is perfect. Why would you mix? Why would you mess with the perfect formula? And, you know, granted, you can't get Ricardo anymore. But, you know, come up with a... This is a Kelvin timeline. Come up with, you know, something new.
And it's not like Benny doesn't mind putting on some makeup or crawling around on the floor in mocap. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the behind the scenes stuff for The Hobbit, but watching him run around as Smaug is one of the funniest things I've ever seen in a long time.
He's an awesome actor.
They could have done anything.
Have you watched his show from BBC, Sherlock Holmes, too?
Yeah.
I mean, you can see there how many roles he can take on. And I mean, I think that Benedict Cumberbatch is an excellent bad guy.
And that's what I'm saying. I mean,
they just tried to, catch lightning in a bottle twice, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, and I think not bad. That's a difficulty too. It's like the standard that he had to make up to was way too high too. You know, it's just like Robert said. He already worked out, and they try to reproduce it. And usually, when that happens, it doesn't go well. When something was right the first time, and you try to remake it, 99.9% of the time, it's not gonna be better. Yeah. But I have to take off my hat to him, because I mean, he sold me out completely, and to me, he was the first Khan. Then I watched this actually, which was the original one, which I mean, it was just as great or better.
So for you,
I it was because I watched Benedict Cumberbatch first, and I like his work so much too that it might actually make my opinion biased.
I think for
I don't care, and I'm admitting it either.
Yeah, for you, it must be really hard to pick. For, you know, for me, I don't know if for you, but we saw the movie originally, and then we saw Benedict second, right? So we're used to, and I saw the original TV show.
It's that first impression. It's more worth than the thousand words, like they say, the first impression.
So my question for you is, like, you saw Benedict first and then saw Ricardo second. Which one is your favorite, Khan?
I have to disappoint you guys. It's still Benedict.
Wow.
Well, let me ask you a question. It's related. Who's the best Batman?
Who's the best Batman? Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
His character totally fits in into what's portrayed by Batman. And after him is, oh my God.
Well, my answers are simple. Everything after that is too dark for me.
I forgot about it. Chris Bell.
Is Hale, yeah.
But Michael Keaton, to me, is the best Batman that's ever been.
Okay, fair enough.
And the worst one, to my disappointment, George Clooney.
That was more like a
what do you call Victoria's Secret parade with Batman.
Oh, wow.
No, but it's in the same vein, because the first Batman I ever saw was the television show. When I was, you know, a little kid at home, my parents would be watching TV and Batman would come on, and then I watched the movie and I'm like, hold on, that's not Adam West. But this is different. This is cool. But I never liked Adam West's portrayal. I'm just going to put that out there.
And I agree with you. I tried to watch the old show. I could never got into it. Like, he never saw me Batman.
It was very campy.
Way too lively and way too charactery. Yeah.
Wasn't it campy?
Batman, you know?
It was very campy.
Yeah.
My favorite Batman is Bale.
Chris Bale is a fantastic Batman.
So it's not just whoever was my first impression. It's just, I feel that Montalban is Khan. Like, mm-hmm. I watched this yesterday evening with my wife. And I put it on, and we were about halfway through the movie, and she was like, what are you podcasting about tomorrow? I was like, oh, Wrath of Khan. And she's like, oh, I thought you just wanted to watch this movie. I was like, no, I gotta watch it for the pod. Even yesterday, it's been like a couple years since I'd seen it, and his presence, every scene that he's in, he owns the scene. Like, even when he's bloodied and his hands all messed up and he's trying to self-destruct the Reliant, like, he's still Khan. Like, it doesn't matter what's going on. And I do
have to give that to him.
And I liked Cumberbatch's Khan. I just don't think he had the same gravitas. Like, he wasn't the person in the scene. Like,
yeah. No. He was not even spotlighted, really. I mean, the new Star Trek movies, I feel like they spotlight a lot more what's Kirk, and then secondly, Spock. That's the main focus of the new movies compared to what I see. When I see classic Star Trek, it's more diversified. Every character has an equal opportunity and a spotlight on the story and on the episode or movie. I have to agree with you. I would say it narrows down more the diversity of characters that abundancy on the story when it comes to the newer movies compared to the older show or movies.
Yeah. More ensemble. Yeah.
And I like that. I mean, it feeds the fan hunger. You know, the fan has, you know, not everybody is into Kirk. You know, you might have a specific favorite. And if you just give the spotlight to the main characters, you don't feed that fan hunger that you have for other characters. And I think that's why Star Trek, the shows, actually even the new shows kind of do that, if you think about it.
Yeah.
But the movies, those Star Trek movies, the Kevin timeline, they just focus on the main, you know. Yeah, I remember.
I agree with you.
I had an issue with the Kevin timeline, a big issue, and then I just got used to it.
You just kind of accept it.
Yeah, because you know it goes down the line with what we already talked about. It what we believe to be like the multiple universes, you know.
Yeah.
So if I think about it that way, I can take it. You know.
The new ones are more of an egotistic Kirk Spock reality.
Well, I think they've always been that way.
Yeah, but like when I watch the shows, like for example, Data, he gets so much spotlight, just like the main characters. There are episodes that where he's actually the main character of the whole episode. Mm-hmm. And other crew members too. What's the name of the engineer? Dr.
Geordi?
Yes. There's episodes where he's a spotlight too. So it's not all about Spock and Captain Kirk. all the contrary. It's like you got episodes where they are on the sidelines completely.
Now, to be fair to the movies, I would have to say that it helps that they're TV shows and they can spend more time. The movie, you have 2 hours and then you have to kind of like move on. You know, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean, it will be a lot more elaborated work, really. But let's admit it's not impossible.
Yeah,
I've made this joke before that Next Gen is like The Office, but just in Star Trek. Like, and that's great. You know, like some of the best episodes don't have hardly anything to do with Picard or Riker. You know, Measure of a Man is probably
the
best or second best episode.
Yeah, we did an episode on that.
I know a lot of people. A lot of people disagree, but I mean, it's a great episode. So
it was a fantastic episode. I haven't watched the whole show, but we did an episode on that particular episode, and I really, really liked it.
That was Giancarlo's introduction to Star Trek.
Mm.
Yes,
is your first one? Okay.
Yep.
So yeah, it was. I remember it was very heated to me.
Because of that, because of how diversified the spotlight is within episode and episode, that's something that I really liked about the show, too. You can pick any episode, and you're not going to be at a loss with backstories most of the time. You can pick up and follow through. And that's, I think that that's the beauty of not having a main character or just two main characters, which the show, the classic Star Trek show, concentrated on. Which is something that Robert told me and I really liked about. It's like you can pick any episode and just go from it and you will not really get lost at backstories because every episode is about something different, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys knew, but I didn't know that some of the actors for this movie, the Wrath of Khan, I don't know. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, this is my favorite property. So in my mind, I think that, you know, every one of the actors want to be in it. But apparently George Takei and even Spock didn't want to be in this movie. I don't know if you knew that, but
I knew George, he's had some problems with Star Trek, like He I think he was the first disgruntled crew member besides Leonard Nimoy, but I don't know how much, I mean, Robert, you might know, but Gio, the amount of like kind of behind the scenes feuding that happened between him and William Shatner, like, I don't know if you've ever seen Galaxy Quest.
Oh, yes. But
the relationship between Alan Rickman and Tim Allen isn't far off. Like they had blow ups on set. They fought, they argued, like Shatner stole lines, like got scenes cut from Spock.
Oh, I mean, my God. Completely ignorant to that.
Yeah. There's books about it. There's documentaries about it. So I'm not surprised Leonard wouldn't want to be in this movie, but I did know George was a disgruntled member. So
yeah. If you watch that movie Galaxy Quest, many people say that's it. You know, that's not very far from what actually happened. You know, and you know, I don't know now, I might be wrong, but I think now he's a kind of different kind of guy because I think age changes you.
Oh, yeah.
But back when he was young, you know, he was that kind of person, you know. So the thing that surprised me the most was that the reason why George Takei is in the movie now is because he called him and he talked to them. Mm. You would think that he's not that one person. You know, you would pick someone else. William actually called George and convinced him to be in the movie. And I'm thinking, you know, whoa, you know, you would think he's not the one person. You know, you pick someone else because this is what the feud is at. But I guess it worked.
I mean, think about it, youth, that ego boost of being the star can get to your head. But like with maturity, that goes away eventually, most of the time, not all the time.
Yeah. And something that has really surprised me as to why Leonard decided to come to this movie is because the studio promised him a death that the fans will remember. And when they say that, he said, okay, I'm in. I was like, that's the only reason you
got to go on Martyr. who wouldn't like that? The Star Trek Jesus Christ.
It's so, like, it's horrible because Spock is, you know, is very beloved character, you know, and yeah. I don't know. Everybody has their reasons. You were saying, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say a fun fact about Leonard Nimoy, directed the movie Three Men and a Baby.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah.
That movie was good. Wow. So, yeah, I was just surprised about that. And I think I found, I was looking at something yesterday where the script, I think, got leaked for the movie. So the idea was to have Spock died off early in the movie. And I think it was a script that got leaked. And I mean, it was crazy because when they were filming that death scene, they had a skeleton crew and no one was allowed. That's how like tight, what big of a tight ship they were running. They didn't want this movie to be leaked. And somehow someone stole the script, it got leaked, and they had to make changes to the movie to now move Spock's death to the end. And I had to agree with what I read online that actually helped the movie to have his death be at the end of the movie instead of at the beginning.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Well, the emotional impact definitely lasts longer, like, because if he dies early and then the good guys still win, you know what I mean? Like, you just kind of, your lasting impression is, oh, we won, but now your lasting impression instead is Spock's death. So imagine getting a leaked script in 1980, like you're like on a mail list in 1980, like someone calls you, like,
but you get, you know, a pouch, an anonymous pouch.
You seen those scripts?
Yeah,
in written form. I mean, it's easy now because you can just email it, but like in written form, that those things were like
huge. I just got this mysterious pouch, and it says Star Trek.
You got UPS. Yeah. You got Trek a box. Script, yeah. You got a box on UPS. It's like you open it up, and it's this huge book.
Like, hey, I just bought this pouch with Star Trek movie in the flea market yesterday. It was $1.50, man. It was a lot.
Wow.
You got your CV radio. Yeah.
But, you know, it has to be someone from the inside because, you know, there's no way. I mean, I understand if, you know, nowadays you get hacked, you know, or, you know. It's a lot easier, I think, maybe. But back then, it was all hard-coded. And I'd like to think it was harder. So it has to be someone from the inside. I didn't get the details of that information, but.
I mean, it was an actor. Definitely it was an actor. Like, I have a buddy who's an actor. And they tell me all the time that it not anymore because it's 2021, but when they were first getting into acting, like they would, like a bicycle messenger would come to your place and give you the script.
Wow. Like,
so, yeah, I mean, especially in the 80s, you know, they probably mailed it and they probably just mailed it to the wrong person. You know, it went to William Shatner instead of William Shatner or something.
I would believe something like that. That would make a lot of sense. Someone, you know, goofed off and mailed it to the wrong person. You know, I just remember something that I have to ask. And I don't know if Giancarlo's might be up to it because, you know, he's new into the Star Trek world. But the question is going to be open to the both of you. Savick. did you guys find odd that here's this Vulcan that, and let me see, Giancarlos, what you know about Vulcans, you know, the common thing that we all, basically what you have seen so far of Vulcans.
In a nutshell?
Yeah.
They're a superior version of humans.
No emotions, stronger.
And on top of that, take out the emotions, which is what makes us stupid.
Now,
so they are our dream formula for what we want to be as humans.
I don't know. I don't think you can have fun if you're a Vulcan.
No, of course not. I'm saying the idealistic thing of what we strive to be. You know,
well,
we try to not let ourselves be taken by emotions. At the same time, emotions are not bad, but when they're in control, it's disaster piece.
Well, let me
have that taken care of.
Let me ask you a question. Sorry, Robert.
Go ahead.
So Data, Next Generation, is as much a stand-in for Vulcans in the new series as he was an android. And as an android, what did he do the entire length of the show?
Study the humanity.
He wanted to become more human. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's just like an android, really, when you think about it. Because there's a saying that if you translate it in English, it's like God gives beard to those who don't have a chin. So basically, the grass is always greener on the other side. Data lacks of that emotion, so he longs for it. He is very interested on it. He would like to have it. He would like to be more human. We are taken over by emotions, and we messed up, so we strive to be in control of them and sometimes to even suppress them.
Yeah.
You know? So, I mean, in a nutshell, the grass is always greener on the other side, is what it feels like, which is very funny because at the end of the day, it's what I'm saying. Emotions are not bad. They just can be problematic when they take control over our decision-making. You know, and that's the human part about us. That's what makes us unpredictable as a race, really.
And I agree with that. And I think for Vulcans, it's more of a, how can I put this? When they experience emotions, people around them could get hurt. So I think it's more of a like a self-control to be around. Including Vulcans, you know, it's just kind of self-control to be around other people. And so they learned from a very young age to control that, because otherwise, you know, where they came from, you know, their ancestors are Romulans.
Think about it. They try to portray it like they have everything under control, but you just don't have to go far. You just have to look at the backstories they put in the new Star Trek movies about Spock's past. How he was bullied.
But Spock
that's a play of emotion, if you think about it.
But Spock is a different story because he's half human.
Huh?
Spock is a different story because he's half human. So he will feel more emotion than a typical Vulcan.
He's been bullied by pure blood Vulcans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I mean, bullying is a display of emotion. A very bad display of emotion, if you think about it.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing with the Romulans.
Yes.
The Romulans and they're offshoots of Vulcans. And they're characterized by being devious and conniving and untrustworthy. Well, it's just because they let that part of their emotional spectrum run wild. Like, whereas Vulcans mentally train from a young age to suppress those. I mean, they essentially brainwash themselves, which no one really talks about, but you know, you're just making that decision for your kid. Thanks, I guess. They definitely do suppress. Were you going to refer to the ending sequence, Robert, with Savick?
Well, Savick, when I saw this movie for the first time, it there's something odd and something that bothered me about her. And I don't know if you noticed this, Giancarlos. Starting with the Kobayashi Maru, how she's very, you know, there was a scene, I think, was it in there where she's like, overall, she's very emotional. and I'm looking at this, and I'm like, hold up a second, she's a Vulcan. There's a scene where they were in an elevator. You know, she was acting very, I don't know, seductive and emotional. Stopped the turbo lift. Towards the end of the movie or the eulogy that Kirk did, you know, on Spock's, you know, the when he was talking about Spock and, you know, all the nice things that he said that, you know, made anybody cry. She was actually in tears. And that's always something that bothered me the first time that I watched this. And I just wanted to get an opinion. I don't know if you guys caught that or if it was just me that it bugged me. I found something later down the line that explained it. But at that time, when I watched it for the first time, I didn't know it. And it just bugged me. Because I'm so used to seeing what the nature of Vulcan is and see this person representing a Vulcan. And they kind of look a lot more to me like a Romulan than a Vulcan would.
But you say it because Romulans are more absent when it comes to emotions.
Let me explain. Not a Romulan, because, I mean, Romulan would have been a completely different story. They would have been very irrational, very emotional. Sabek was still controlled. You know, she was very composed. But emotions leaked. And that's something you don't see in a Vulcan. So I was always bothered by it.
I think part of it might be just her portrayal. Because we do, there are in other intellectual properties, some portrayals are more accurate than others. Like when it comes to Vulcans, like I think Tuvok from Voyager, he's very much a stereotypical Vulcan. And I think even to a lesser extent, like Sarek, you know, also very stereotypical. But like T'Pol and Savick and I hope it's not just a male-female thing because that'd be really weird. But like, I think that they let a little bit more out. They just didn't necessarily let it take over them. Like, because the whole idea behind Vulcan emotions is that they're so intense. Like, you know, you and I suffer anger. We get upset. You know what I mean? Whereas they get vengeful. They become wrathful. They... Like, it's more than just that. I think that's part of it. So
I this is what I found out. And when I read it, I was like more understanding. And it made, it's kind of like and I don't know if you heard this. There was an interview with Leonard Nimoy when I guess the question came in about Sabek's backstory. Because it made me feel good because... when I was reading these, I knew it was not just me. It was, you know, there was other people questioning the same thing. So that's why I was asking to you guys to see if you notice this as well. But apparently, Sabek is half Romulan, half Vulcan. And when I heard that, I was like, now that explains it. So I don't know if you guys heard that.
Is that canon?
Well, this is what Leonard Nimoy came out and said as a backstory for Sabek on an interview for, I think it was the Sci-Fi Channel. Let me see. I can't see when it was. But when they said, I mean, it might not be canon for me, but it explains. It makes me feel at ease.
Yeah, her portrayal. Yeah.
Because... that, if you think about it, Spock is half human and he's able to, he's able to control to a certain extent. You know, I guess when you're older, you don't have the same control as a Vulcan that you have as a young mean. But it explains because if Sabek is, in fact, half human and I mean half Romulan and half Vulcan, it's kind of like the same thing as Spock, a little bit more on steroids.
Because Romulans do display emotions if you think about it. I mean, I have to go by the material I have on my mind, which is the newer movies. Mm-hmm. But when the Romulans shows up, they're full of rage and wrath, if you think about it. And that's just one more emotion, if you think about it. And I mean, everything is a matter of analogy. If there are those emotions, I mean, they're full of hatred and they're pissed off because their world was not protected as it was promised. So that hatred is actually root of love and attachment that there existed before.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, they can claim they can be in control or whatever, no emotions. There are emotions. The best Vulcan that I can tell you did portray the Vulcan supposed character is Spock's father, because when her mother dies, he doesn't cry or anything. It's like when I saw that, I was like, God, that guy didn't care about that lady at all. But it's because he's actually adopting what it's sold to us as the actual character of Vulcans.
Yeah, he's, you know, for starters, he's a full-fledged Vulcan. And yes, he's been doing this all his life since he was a young kid. It's a lot harder for Spock that is half-human. And I don't know, I want to speculate that for a Romulan, is actually harder. Because a Romulan's emotions, I might be mistaken here, but I think Romulan's emotions are a lot stronger than human emotions.
Yes. I mean, you just have to see to the extent that their emotion takes them.
What do you think?
How stronger it is.
I want to hear your opinion.
I guess I don't know enough to answer that question. Oh, okay. I mean, they're an offshoot, right? They're not Vulcans anymore. They're a completely different race, physically, physiologically,
biologically.
Yeah, everything about them is different. So it maybe at some point, like in their evolutionary tract, they aren't as intense emotionally. Because I mean, like, I think the difference is they just embraced a part of that emotional spectrum that just made them different. Like, they reject logic, you know? And so then you get kicked out of your planet, right? Like, well, you can't stay here because you guys are causing too much trouble. So you got to go. So that that emotional backlash, that pain that Romulans suffered, the ancient Romulans, they instead twist that into this untrustworthiness that just makes them slime balls. I mean, really, that's what they are. They're just, you know, they backstab everybody. They, like, Klingons won't trust them. Well, not all of them. But Klingons don't trust them all. You know, they're like, they even, like, Worf even says it, like, Romulans, they are without honor. So, I mean,
you have a very good point. I never really thought about it that way, but the resentment adds to that. The original conflict, you know, because if you think about it, they were once a race that split up, and now they get kicked out, and they go found Romulus, and they have, I can only imagine that resentment towards Vulcan and Vulcan culture and everything that has to do with Vulcan is an offense to what it is to be them. They consider themselves to be, and I like to think this, they consider to be the original Vulcan, because they were like that from the very, I guess if you look at the time span, they were there before Vulcans. So they're the original Vulcan. I don't know. I might be putting it on the wrong words, but
I think it's like 10,000 years or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like it's a significant time jump between, because this is like even in Star Trek, like as a technology, the primary races are right around the same level. Like they all fly around in space. They all use lasers and, you know, torpedoes. They all warp drive. They all do different things, but they're all pretty much on the same level technologically. And yeah. Romulus is fairly far away from Vulcan, galactically speaking. And so they were separated for so long that humans had already met Vulcans. And when they first interacted with Romulans, they couldn't share their screen. Like, they couldn't look and see what the other people looked like.
Yeah.
So, like, they had no idea. Like, the Balance of Terror is a great episode because it is, in fact, like, not only is it terrifying that the ship can appear out of nowhere and blow stuff up, but they happen to be manned and captained by people who look exactly like the first officer of your flagship. So,
yeah,
like, that's part of the title, the Balance of Terror. Like, which side is scarier, knowing that there's an entire group of people like this, or that they can cloak, you know?
To me, they are the closest thing to the race where cans come from.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think about that?
He was genetically engineered to be a conqueror, so.
Yeah. He was. I think it was. He ruled from 92 to 96, I believe.
Yeah.
I remember from the conversation on the episode, episode 22, season 1, they were actually idolizing him because under his rule there was no more mass murders. But he was a tyrant.
So it's on oppression. Even though there's no casualties, doesn't mean it's better.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, have you guys tried Romulan ale?
What?
Romulan ale?
It's illegal in Federation space.
I think I made some for Giancarlo at one point.
Did we?
Yeah, the blue drink.
Oh, yes, man. Of course.
That's how much of a fan you think I am, that I can make a Romulan ale.
Because we have drank too much Jägermeister before we drink that.
I don't know, man. That stuff is strong, too.
Yeah, I had 3 shots, but I had, like 8 or 9 shots back-to-back?
I don't know. I think you could get really bad even without the Jägermeister.
I made it alive, man. After that much.
So I have a question for you guys. They were kind of upfront with the symbolism, but did you guys see a lot of the parallels between Wrath of Khan and Moby Dick, the book?
Kind of. And let me explain that for a little bit. Giancarlo knows me as a book eater.
Warm. Yeah.
Bookworm. I eat books like crazy. Moby Dick is not one of those books. I started it, and I don't know what is it. I mean, I read a lot of classics, so I know it's not because it was a classic. I enjoyed The Three Musketeers. But for some reason, that book, I could not get into it. So I did notice a couple, but probably not as much as I should have noticed if I would read the entire book.
For me to put it in a nutshell, because I read Moby Dick way too long a time ago for school, but I could say that untamability, and of course, we humans are always trying to stay at the top of the chain. It doesn't matter what the hierarchy we're talking about. And that big whale was Khan.
Well, if you think about it, Kirk was Khan's white whale. Like, he's quoting Moby Dick at the end of the movie.
Oh, yeah,
he's like, you know, with my last breath, I spit at thee. Like, there's the whole, the coffin, like the Ishmael saves himself with at the end. Like, it's the, like, but instead they put Spock in it and they shoot it at a planet. But I mean, like, vengeance just consumes Khan. Like, he could have done anything. I mean, obviously, the movie tells us that wasn't the case, but he didn't have to become this vengeful avatar.
He could have just. Would it be because of that? Actually, that could have actually gotten in the way of him, if you think about it.
Yeah. There's a lot of parallels, and I read Moby Dick when I was like in eighth grade, so a lot of the details are a little fuzzy, but I do remember the first time I saw this movie, and after reading that book, and I was like, ah, okay. And then he's even reading it, like when they find the Botany Bay.
Oh yeah,
like, he finds a copy of it. Yeah, he's just like, oh, Moby Dick, and then you know,
it was actually there.
This is Pequod.
When Chekhov went down the planet, it was there actually as one of those books. Which brings me to another question. Chekhov, you know, I remember being so confused the first time that I saw it. And I don't know if that was, I see the entire, you know, the original series. And Khan looks at Chekhov and says, like, I know you. And I'm like, did I miss something? I went back and rewatched. It was season 1, episode 22, but Chekhov doesn't come into season 2. So yeah. I was just like, what? And I rewatched. Did I miss something? Did you guys get the same thing?
No, you're right. I think they retcon it. no pun intended. that he was just a member of the crew. We just didn't see him. Like, they don't make a big song and dance about him being transferred to the ship. I think he's just one day he's not on the bridge and then the next day he is on the bridge. So,
yeah,
it's a plot hole. It's a plot hole. It's a continuity error. We got a continuity error.
And once I read that, it kind of makes sense because that's pretty much every character. They just one day show up. You know, and you figure the way the Starfleet works is you work up ranks. So you start, you know, you're part of the lower decks. A great show, by the way. You're part of the lower decks, and eventually you grow up to be, you know, a part of the crew. I don't know if that's wrong way of saying it because you are part of the crew, but and eventually you go back to like interact with the senior officers, and a couple of years later you might be a senior officer. So having that, when I read that, it's like, okay, I'll take it. But I remember it was just very confusing for me. I was like, hold on a second, where did he meet? And I thought I missed something. You know, I don't know if Giancarlo knows me, but I had to watch shows from the beginning because of that reason. If they come up with something and I don't get it, that's why I have to watch it from the beginning so I can understand everything. And
let's elaborate on that. You have to watch shows and you have to finish them before you even begin something else. If not, it's gonna eat you.
Yeah, it's gonna eat. It's gonna eat me alive.
I bet a part of it was maybe it was supposed to be a different character, not Chekhov. Like maybe that was supposed to be Sulu, but since George was having some trouble with the studio, they replaced him in the scene. But I mean, it's just a continuity here. That's all it is. I don't think Ricardo knew enough. Like, I'm not saying he didn't remember things, but he probably had no idea who half the people he was acting with were, you know, cause it's been 20, like 15 some odd years.
I mean, if I played the devil's advocate,
that's the only thing I can assume, yeah.
Yeah, if I played the devil's advocate, for all we know, remember he was looking at the computers, the computer terminal, and he looked at a lot of records. So for all we know, he looked at records for the entire crew, because it would make sense if you're planning to take over the ship. You want to see who everybody is and what everybody can do. So, I mean, I have taken it that far where I say, okay, you know, maybe when he was in the infirmary with Bones, the Bones showed him how to look at the computer. When while he was looking at the manuals for the Enterprise, he looked at the crew because it would make sense.
I mean, he had to have looked at the manifest because I think he singles that lady out because she's first of all, why is someone on the Starship Enterprise an expert in like Neo-Earth history? Like, what purpose does that have? Why does she know all that? Anyways, so yeah. he probably singled her out because he knew that she knew who he was. And so he had to have looked at the crew manifest. So
yeah. And after I'd analyzed that, then I was okay. I just remember being really, really lost. It's like, no, I didn't miss an episode. I know I didn't. And you know, it's kind of...
I think because of my ignorance of the background information and I have not seen all the episodes or most of them, I just took it as it came. Yeah. So I did not feel confused by that.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't watch the episodes when they come in either. You know, I was born in 1970, so there's no possible way. But I watched them all, you know, very young. And when I watched that movie for the first time, which was not at the theaters, it just hit me. That part always hit me. It was just like, especially knowing who I am. It's like, did I miss something? You know, and I go back and I research. It's like, no, I did watch everything. It's like, what?
Wait a second. Something's amiss.
Yeah. So, oh, man, this is a great movie. This is a great movie. And I think we could continue talking for hours.
Yeah. I mean, just for the record, we have to say Khan as a character is one of the best villains ever. In TV.
Yeah.
That I have to say. And yeah. I don't know if you know, but like to me, and you can ask Robert, I don't have favorite heroes, I have favorite villains. Like Batman, you talk about me, Batman, my bigger debate is about Jokers, not about Batmans.
So
and the same way, Ken is one of the best villains I ever seen all across all genres of TV shows and movies.
Well, he's a zenith, right? If you think about it, because Anthony and I, we did it for Star Trek Day. We did our top five favorite whatevers. And since Wrath of Khan came out, every time they need a big, bad, evil guy, they just channel Khan. Like, if you watch, what's it called? Generations, Star Trek Generations.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Soren is just, he's just Khan, right? That's all he is. He's a megalomaniac. He's just not genetically engineered. Star Trek VI, Undiscovered Country, Chang is just Khan. He's just a Klingon instead. They spend the next couple movies trying to recreate that formula. And so that's why he's so good is because
he became the template villain.
Yeah, I mean, they do the same thing with Darth Vader, right? Yeah. Kylo Ren is just a reinterpretation of Darth Vader.
Yeah.
You know,
I agree. I can't help but think that studios, which makes sense, they want to make everything all about the money. You know, they want to make the most and they want to try to replicate what gave them the most money. And maybe not necessarily concentrate on the art form, which is a shame, you know. But you do have those happy accidents, you know, that you are glad that they happen. So, yeah, no, this movie is great, and I am very honored to have you on our podcast after. Thanks, yeah. Many yeah, times trying you. To make it happen.
Well, like it's unfortunately we're a victim of a schedule because to peel back the kimono a little bit. I mean, we release episodes, you know, weekly or whatever, but we bang them out usually over the span of like 5 or 6 days. We record like 2 or 3 months worth of content, pretty compact.
Wow.
So. It's just because, unfortunately, it's not unfortunate, but Anthony travels for his job.
And so you got to take advantage of the open schedule days. Yeah.
There's times that he'll be, like, I think he was gone for all of April.
Wow.
he traveled a bunch of places. He wasn't just in one place. So, but yeah, that's unfortunately it's why I'm here by myself. So,
okay. Well,
but thank you for having me.
Maybe next time we can have him
you guys are ready
on our show.
Yeah, well, whenever you guys want to come on, let me know.
Definitely.
Absolutely, absolutely. And let us know again for our public where they can find you too. We would like to make sure that they can get to your podcast and listen to your content because it's great.
Yes.
Well, thank you. The best place is twitter.com/sci-fi wise guys. We're on Instagram as well, but, you know, I just post pictures of cats on that. but if you want to give up your anonymity, you can join us on facebook.com. The Sci-Fi Wise Guys podcast group, but on all your major podcasting platforms of choice. So Sci-Fi Wise Guys.
Awesome.
Nice.
Thank you so much, everybody, for joining. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll see you back again next time. Well, this is the end of our show for now. Please let us know if you like this episode.
And if you have any idea about which topics you would like us to discuss in our next episodes, please reach out.
Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi Remnant. And if you like this podcast, share it.
And don't forget to rate us in your favorite podcast platform. This will help us grow. Thank you.
See you next time. This is Science Fiction Remnant, signing off. Next on Science Fiction Remnant.
This is Season 1, Episode 48, movie, Ad Astra.
To the point where it was affecting his relationship.
Yeah.
I believe towards the beginning.
Yeah, I was just about to get to that. Like, yeah, because he had issues with his wife or something at Earth, and it was...
Because we're social animals.
Studied.
It's like, guys, like, buried too much stuff.
Yeah, they buried everything. Oh, man. That tight spacesuit on Capsule B. With the high heels, yeah.